Welcome to the Unstuck Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Miner. This weekly no-fluff mindset show arms you with the practical tools you need to get unstuck so you can get exactly what you want out of life. Remember, when you change your mind, your life will follow. Let's get into today's episode. Hey there, friends. Welcome back to the Unstuck Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm Sean, your host, and today we have a very special guest joining me. I'm so thrilled to introduce you to Dr. Rachel. She's going to talk more about some of the kind of underlying issues that are potentially keeping you stuck and unconsciously, quite often, keeping you stuck. These things that maybe we act out in our everyday life, or we are trying to figure out what's really going on, and they're at the core, they're underneath it all. They're ready to be uncovered, to bring awareness to, and then to actually do something about, to move through, to the point where we can then expand and grow and shift and change and everything we're looking to do here on this path to getting unstuck. So I was very happy to invite her on the show to chat with us more about that. So let's get into it. Before I do, just a brief little introduction of Dr. Rachel. She is a licensed clinical psychologist empowering seekers all over the world to awaken their authentic potential, radically actualize an aligned life, and cultivate the art of deep relating. For nearly 15 years, she's been supporting people to find, accept, and love themselves without conditions. She guides people to sharpen their ability to transform their life in all meaningful areas. Through years of professional, academic, clinical, and experiential rigor, she's created the Numinous Path. TNP is her rare and sacred modality for whole inner healing. Dr. Rachel's approach combines psychology, spirituality, somatic awareness, sensuality, relational attunement, and myth traditions. The work guides you into deeper parts of your own empowerment so you can enhance and expand your quality of life. All right, without further ado, let's chat with Dr. Rachel. Dr. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the Unstuck Podcast today.
Thank you for having me, Sean. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I can't wait to introduce you to my audience here. I think you have a lot to share and a lot that they'll really resonate with. I'm excited for our chat. So why don't we get right into it? I really want for everyone to know more about you and not just what you do now, but really what got you to that point to where you do what you do today. So what's behind that story?
Yeah, you know, I think my professional path always had a pretty linear trajectory, which is interesting because part of where I find myself is sort of confronting some of the more messy parts that actually allowed me to become more of who I am, both personally and in my professional role. But early on, I mean, you know, it was always such a straight shot. I just always knew I would go to college. And once I was there, it was clear I would study. It took a little while to determine I would study psychology. And then anyway, the path just sort of unfolded from there. And by the time I was 30, I had a doctorate, 2 master's degrees. And I was really on this straight path, being a psychologist. But the juicy part is that, you know, I was also this human being who had a lot of unconscious, unhealed trauma that was influencing me in ways that I got to a point I couldn't ignore anymore. So, you know, I was in a relationship and I had already gotten all these degrees and I was working and I was very fulfilled. You know, I felt really proud of those achievements. But my romantic relationship was falling apart in ways that were really impactful and scary to me and confusing to me. So I had to start looking at myself. I had to start looking at how I was behaving and reacting that was like so outside of who I knew I was or thought I was. And I just didn't understand who this part of me, like this version of me that would show up in this relationship when I was triggered, which I didn't even know at the time. You know, I didn't even know what it meant to be triggered, not even though I had all this education, you know. So it was that. It was really my own suffering and my own turmoil that led me to beautiful series of awakenings and really sought deep healing. And that has changed everything. It has changed, you know, how I relate to the work I do now. It's, I mean, literally true transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. And so now that's not only what you seek out personally, but what you do professionally with your patients and clients as well.
That's
you take
right.
them through that path. Yeah. So I'm really curious, and I think probably everyone else is, to know more about these awakenings, because I think it's kind of I don't want to say buzzword, but it's a pretty heavy word that gets thrown out a lot kind of in this spiritual energetic space.
Right.
And it's an important word, I think, too, but I think it's also something a lot of people don't quite understand, especially if they're newer to this work. So can you walk us through kind of what that looked like for you and felt like, and how did that go?
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important. You're right. It lose sometimes these words that, you know, gain widespread understanding or just they lose the true depth of their meaning. So I appreciate this question. I think it's multifaceted. You know, in some ways it could be considered a breakthrough of some kind. You know, it's like an awareness of a truth that you remember. You know, it's like an uncovering of a true deep part of you that it becomes free when you can truly know it in a way that you never have, or at least, you know, haven't since you were pure before whatever muddied it from its purity.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. And so it's like, it's a profound, for me, there's been like a series of them, one in particular. And then I think there is a spiritual element to it where for me personally, there's like, I don't think they're distinct actually. Like the more I've come to know myself beyond the stories I told myself about who I was that really kept me disconnected, the more I found safety in my body, the more I've been able to love myself and really heal from a lot of difficulties that weighed on me, the more I've been able to expand into a higher awareness of consciousness, you know, like a reality that's bigger than me in any given moment in this physical world. I think it was actually like probably my most potent, maybe first experience of being awakened. I was actually driving, I live in Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area, and I was driving to, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but to Spirit Rock, which is a spiritual meditation center founded by Jack Kornfield, who's sort of I'm so in love with him. And and I was driving there, I think it was like one of the first times I was going, and I started to weep. Like on the car ride there, you know, I was overcome by the land, by an inner sense of peace, appreciation for like, and like this deep knowing that where I was going was home. You know, it was like, I was doing this thing for myself that I deeply, profoundly needed and felt so right. And so it's like, that to me was like this opening, you know, my heart opened, my awareness opened, my connection to all that is opened. And so that felt, and I wept at how beautiful that was and how grateful I was to be in that moment. And that felt like an awakening.
That just gave me chills because I've been through that too. It is. And when you don't exactly know, for me, it was a place where I didn't exactly know what that was at the time. Still, it just feels so different than anything you've ever really experienced before in the best way possible. And you just like want more of that. It becomes almost like this drug of like, how can I feel more of this just opening and awakening and having that shift? So that's so beautiful.
Mm,
and one thing I love about your story that I want to talk more about, and we'll probably get into another kind of, I don't want, again, buzzword, although I don't think that's what it is, but that's all I can come up with right now. But you mentioned that in this relationship, things were coming up that were triggers for you. And instead of you then going, something's wrong with this person, something's wrong with this relationship, you know, really going external, you went internal. You looked inside yourself and you started this process of really going inward. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't do right away. And when they do, again, keeping them stuck because you're looking outside, you're blaming others or blaming situations or circumstances. And we never take the time, or we never even understand the concept of going inward and learning more about ourselves because of that trigger, because of that situation. So I love that. And I think that it's something that maybe we can flesh out a little more to where, like, how did you know how to do that? I guess, and maybe it is because of your background. And how do you guide others into that process too, in the work that you do?
Yeah, I think it's a more courageous path to point the finger towards yourself instead of shaming and blaming the other, which, hey, I'm not saying I didn't do some of that, you know, yeah. at least not initially. I think there's something interestingly instinctual about that. I think especially if we've been prone to protect ourselves through all of these defenses that really the healing path asks us to crumble, you know, to step away from. So it's hard work, you know, and so I get that people resist it. It can feel scary to confront parts of us that we don't know it's safe to be with. But, you know, the truth is I got the relationship and my experience in it got to a point that I could no longer ignore what was obviously something for me. Like, it didn't matter who could have been him or anybody else. It was just a culmination of realities that I was having to confront because of my own sense of care for myself. It's like, I had to look at what was coming up for me because I didn't like how I was behaving. It didn't feel like who I really was. And I knew on some level it wasn't. And no, I love telling this story too. The interesting piece about this, I think, is that when I was sort of alluding to earlier, is I do think we all have this core truth, this essence of who we are, and a deep knowing of what we need and where we need to go to get it. But that gets so muddied by all of life's traumas and stressors and circumstances and conditions. But the amazing thing is, like, when I finally got to this point, he and I had one really gnarly, horrific fight, probably one of the worst in my life. And it was something that I couldn't ignore. And when I realized I needed something, I needed help, I needed some source of guidance, I knew exactly where to go. Like, I went straight to my local meditation center, you know, and I sat there, you know, and that really started to open up my relationship to Buddhist Dharma and meditation and all of that. But it was like, that was something that just came naturally. There was an intuitive knowing of what I needed. And also just like, it didn't make sense to not give myself that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so true. You actually were open to it, it seems. Maybe that's something that some of us don't realize yet or don't recognize yet, that we have that ability even to do so. And I think it's so important and just so critical to the actual work of getting unstuck and learning more about yourself and healing yourself, which is what we do here. So, all right, let's move on. You've talked a few times or brought up the word a few times of trauma. How do you know if you have trauma? Again, I feel like it's something where if you're new to this work, it's a word you hear a lot, but then you're like, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, my childhood was fine, growing up fine, whatever. But I think a lot of us aren't even to the point of recognizing what is or isn't would be considered trauma and how that is actually still within us. We're carrying it around every day.
Right. And it's expressing itself through you too, you know. You know, I think that the being a human embodied on this earth, we all experience trauma. You can't sort of get away from life without some of it. You know, it's on a spectrum, and there's big trauma and there's little t trauma, there's vicarious trauma. So there's, you know, acute instances of trauma, like someone's gone to war or had a car accident or some unexpected crisis or catastrophe that threatens their life or their sense of stability or safety in some way. The work that I do and I had some acute experiences of very scary things happen in my earlier life, but really I think what I work with in myself and those who come to me for support is more of the relational trauma, the attachment traumas that we experience. So that's like the people who said, like, I had a fine childhood, you know, my parents loved me. It was okay. But maybe had a parent who was emotionally invulnerable, emotionally immature, unable to, you know, attune, was really critical or controlling, depended on the child to meet their needs instead of vice versa. So there's all these like really distorted dynamics that can come up that are dysfunctional in family systems that I think a lot of us have been conditioned to sort of accept as normal or natural when it really isn't. And so it influences what we expect from life and how we sort of set a standard around how we even behave. I would say one insight into whether or not you're carrying a relational trauma and attachment trauma is, you know, looking at the quality of your relationships and how loving they are, how safe they feel, how secure they are, how able you are to communicate openly your needs, assert boundaries, you know, how you feel in them is a really big indication of how healthy they are. Mm-hmm. And then I was just going to also add, you know, I think that it's also important to recognize the systems, you know, systemic trauma is also real, especially for women in the Western world. And I mean, women everywhere, really. But I think paradigms that we live under, oppressive paradigms that really influence how we experience ourselves and how stuck or unstuck or, you know, worthy or unworthy, beautiful or unbeautiful we feel, like, you know, these are operating for marginalized communities, or, you know, people who are oppressed. So I just want to name that too. Those are important traumas that we carry as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like you said, we can probably start picking out some of our potential traumas just by how we go about everyday life. Just certain things that we're doing and how we're behaving and even how we're thinking and acting can be some guidance for us as to what might be still within ourselves as trauma, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
That's interesting, because I think we become so on autopilot with so much of our lives that we don't even know it's providing us clues.
Right.
And we could have a total transformation and, you know, a different trajectory if we can just look within a little further and understand that. All right. So I wanted to really pick your brain a little bit more about shame and what you call shame shadows. I'm very interested in what that is.
You know, it's so funny. I think shadow work was developed by Carl Jung, who was a really sort of important figure for psychology and depth psychology, and sort of was the first to meld spirituality and psychology in the West. And he talks a lot about shadow work. And I think as I sort of do the work in myself and support those who come to me, I think that actually the shadows, parts of our psyche and the parts of ourselves that we split off because they're shame-based. Mm. So shame shadows are just really the parts of our experience that we carry that we wish we didn't, or that we have harsh judgments about, or that someone at some time made us believe weren't okay. And so we split them off because they're shameful. And because the shame is sort of this piece that suggests to us that if we were to incorporate the shadowy parts of ourselves, that we wouldn't be okay, we wouldn't be accepted, we wouldn't be loved, and we wouldn't belong. So they're really important, because when we split them off, oftentimes what happens is we compensate for them through various, oftentimes dynamic complexes. So one common one I see is sort of, any insecurity we have that we split off because it was made to, somehow along the line, we were made to feel like it wasn't okay to have this part of us that wasn't as strong as another part, or, whatever. We carry shame around this part. And then to compensate for that part, we develop a superiority, right? Like then we really judge others, or if we feel dumb in some way, we'll split that off, and then we'll judge other people anytime, I have a person I work with who has a really harsh judgment of people when they ask dumb questions. Mm. And it's because he, really struggles to feel his shame shadow is his incompetence. Mm-hmm. And so if he has no space for incompetence in his life, what he does is he won't ask questions to any superiors at work for fear of being perceived as incompetent. And what that means is he works later hours, longer hours unnecessarily. He's, debilitated by anxiety around things he doesn't know. And he compensates for that by suggesting to himself through his, this complicated ego complex, that he is superior, and that anybody who asks a question that he fears in himself is dumb. He judges them as dumb. So what we reject, we project. And my observation is that the shadows are driven by shame.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And so when we have the shadows and they're rooted in shame, and is that something that we know is happening? It seems like it's probably quite a bit under the surface. Like we just are who we are, but then come to find out it's really something that we've split off and started right. Actually projecting out. That seems like we would be really not aware that's happening.
Yeah. And it's like, and the insight comes in when in this example, for instance, he's like, oh, I'm realizing I'm working like crazy hours because I'm terrified to ask a question I have, mm-hmm. Like that is curious. Mm-hmm. So although, and I think that's the in, so for people who are listening, who may be wondering like, do I have some of this? Like, what does this mean? Like, where are my shadows lurking? I would say start to notice and be really curious about the things you've told yourself, this is who I am, that don't serve you or have consequences that impact you negatively. Mm-hmm. So that's the in. That's always the in. And on some level, we recognize like, oh, there's this part of me that does this thing that like always gets me into trouble somehow, or always ends up getting me in an argument, or always ends up making me work longer or feel guilty or feel anxious, or not ask the question. And it's like this inner tension. You can even ask, I would say you start with the body. Like, when does the body constrict? When do you feel tight and tense in the body? When does your face get flushed? Like these are all insights into shadows that may need to bring conscious awareness to free yourself from.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, it comes up surface level and something I think a lot of us can understand as an insecurity. And when we think insecurities, at least for this audience, which is primarily female, when we think that it can come up with like our physicalness, like our physical body, how we look, our shape, our weight, those right. kinds of things. And most of us have some sort of insecurity around that. So how does that connection happen?
Mm-hmm. I think that is the connection, like any place in you that you reject, I think actually, so yeah, now I'm fleshing it out. I think it's, we can have insecurities, you know, because mm-hmm. we're imperfect beings and there's parts of us that we might wish were different or work to be different or like whatever the thing is, we're not perfect. And I think that's part of the systemic trauma that we need to liberate ourselves from, you know, this notion that we have to be perfect. It's not possible. It's not who we are. And so there are gifts in being able to accept and love. And that's really the crux of the work, is being able to honor and own the insecurities. Like, oh yeah, sometimes I ask dumb questions. It doesn't mean I'm dumb. And that's where the shame thing comes in. It's like when we believe that an insecurity means something about how good or bad we are, how worthy or unworthy, how acceptable or unacceptable we are, we split it off. And that's when it goes into the shadow. And then we develop all of these intricate, unconscious ways to protect ourselves from the fear that we're not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when we, yeah.
It almost seems then like detaching the insecurity from meaning something about us.
That's right. That's like right.
Part of the process there.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to kind of pick your brain a little bit for people who are just kind of starting out with this work. And like I shared before we started recording, the audience here is very much into getting fully well, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all of it, and understanding how much all of that plays a role in true health and wellness. So I would love to just get some ideas of some maybe tips, tricks, tools that you share with your patients and who you work with. Just ways we could start getting started to uncover some more about ourselves and maybe some past wounds, past traumas, these insecurities, everything that we're kind of sharing here today. What can we do about it? Just to even get started, I think obviously so much of this is about working with a professional, and that's really where you can get to the stuff that you can't quite see on your own, which we all have, every single one of us. But just to start the ball rolling, what can we do?
Right, sure. Yeah, and I just want to commend all of the people who are part of your community and everybody listening. It sounds like, you know, your community, you are my people, and I really applaud, you know, your willingness to do this work. We need it and you deserve it. So I think definitely, you know, I do, of course. I mean, I recommend everybody, if resources are, you know, allow for some type of therapist or spiritual mentor, you know, a women's social circle, support circle, something, without a doubt, there's no way you can do this work without that level of support. And I have a workshop too, if anybody, it's self-paced, and really goes into deep dives into shadow work and inner child healing and boundary setting. And so it'd be a nice adjunct for anybody if you want more of that. But as a starter, I mean, I always, always recommend to start with, we really need to bring awareness to our experience as a foundation. And so, you know, I strongly recommend building a mindfulness practice and bringing, you know, even just starting to ask yourself, like, what am I aware of in any given moment? Am I aware? What am I aware of? You know, you can start to just notice and bring labels to experience as you're undergoing a day. You can start when you do the dishes and just really being present with the experience of washing the dishes and noticing the sensation of the water and seeing the bubbles and whatever comes up in you. I mean, that's, we have to start to attune to our own experience and to know what is happening for us and where we're triggered and what the emotion is, what the sensation in the body is. So that's, I'd say, the foundation is to start to intend on being mindful. And one really helpful acronym I encourage people use to take mindfulness then to the process of curiosity is SNAC, And so I'd say, you know, just like snack on the experience for a minute. And snack is to stop. Anytime you're experiencing anything that feels like it's worth knowing better, like you're triggered, you're tense, you're irritated, you know, you're prone to react to something automatically, this is a great chance to practice. So you can stop, notice what's happening, accept that this is an experience, that this is happening, accept that this is here. And then the next step is curiosity, and this is really where we start to get to the meat on the bone. And this is just really taking inventory, just getting like insatiably curious about your experience. What's happening in your body? What are the sensations? How intense is it? What are the accompanying feelings? How intense are they? What are the stories that are happening in the mind about what's going on? What are the thoughts? What are the beliefs? What are the urges? What do you feel compelled to do or not do? And just really stay open to understanding all that's coming up. And then lastly, to offer yourself kindness, which is a crucial component to doing this work overall, especially the shame shadow stuff. Yeah, offer a self-kind statement towards, you know, the experience, and then go from there. But I think, yeah, part of what I definitely help people do is, you know, bring awareness to the experience, identify the origins, do some of the digging around, like, where did this start for me? And what do I really need? Usually it's an inner child. And we have a lot of past personas. So it could be any variation or version of you that was at one point. But a lot of it starts early and then sort of accrues over the course of time thereafter. So yeah, you can dig around like, oh, when's the first time I ever felt this way? What about this is familiar for me? Is this a pattern in my family that I've just accepted as normal? Does this hurt me? In what way? How might I shift this for something that would feel more empowering? So anyways, a lot of questions and prompts that I have in the workshop, and that help to get at it a little bit. And then from there, it's really just about attuning to what the true core needs are. Oh, I just really need to feel seen and accepted and safe. And I can give myself to that through how I show up for myself, how I talk to myself, how kind and compassionate I am, how much of an ally I am to myself, and all of these places that are the most tender, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was so great. I love the snack model. I think that's just the most like succinct, direct kind of way to really approach this, and something I think everyone can remember. Mm. And even just apply that to one spot in your day when you do start feeling tense or irritable or something like that, and really build that awareness. Wow, that would be so transformational, I think. And you put it into the category of mindfulness, and I'm interested to talk more about that. And I just think there's people that understand mindfulness and maybe want to be mindful and maybe even try to be mindful, but they just can't quite develop that. It's still like definitely having this kind of ego, mental chatter, inner critic voice going on in their head most of the time, and mm-hmm. being on autopilot mode, just getting through the day till their head hits the pillow and that's that. What can we do on a more regular basis to cultivate that mindfulness and just make that connection a little deeper for ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, the practice itself is always accessible. So it's natural, you know, and necessary at times to deviate from presence. You know, we have autopilot for a reason. It actually, you know, it reduces a cognitive load. You know, I mean, we need to get through our days. And so, you know, I guess what I want to say is that the beauty of awareness and awareness practice is that it's always accessible. And all you really need to do is start with an intention to practice. And any experience, there's always the invitation. So I think you know, for anyone who struggles with it, I think I would recommend get really clear on why it's important to you to devote yourself to it as a practice or to experiment with it as a practice. You know, get really clear on the underlying value there so that it's something you can intend to do more or be more with. And then once you're really clear on like, yeah, this is important to me to practice because I want to feel more grounded in my life. I want to feel more peace. I want to feel more connected to those I love. I want to feel less reactive. I want to feel more self-respect. You know, like whatever the reason is, make sure it's, you know, you've gotten the core essence of it. And then I'd say, you know, be generous with yourself around it as a practice, and especially if you're starting out. And so I think the questions of like, you know, any given moment, awareness is always accessible. So anytime you notice yourself unaware, that's awareness. And then you can just bring it back to the body. What am I feeling? Oh, I'm walking. Oh, I'm getting in the car. Oh, I'm opening the door. Oh, I'm, you know, and sometimes you can practice it with like deliberately, like you can set aside time, 15 minutes a day to practice mindful walking or to practice mindful eating. You can eat one meal a day where you're undisturbed. It's just you and your meal, you and your family, you know. So there's that. Meditation certainly helps. And then there's like in any given moment of experience, when I'm on autopilot, I have access to awareness and I can come back online and just be with what I'm doing and just sometimes labeling the experience, walking, washing the dishes. Oh, now I'm getting this soap. Now I'm getting this sponge. You know, that in and of itself can be elucidating.
Mm-hmm. It's almost kind of like an active meditation in a way.
That's right.
You know, like just remaining on the present, like what you're doing just at that moment is a really good way to get centered, I think. And you do recommend meditation. And is it something that you guide your patients and those you work with to do?
Yeah. You know, I do feel compelled to say one more thing on the inner critic. You know, that's a big portal into the shame shadow. So and also the inner critic, you know, one of the ways I work with people and how I perceive these different parts of us that come in, even the parts of us that feel incorrigible or like feel really mean and are that, you know, when we really get to know that part, usually we discover that it's protecting us from some deeper vulnerability or some deeper belief that we have about being okay. And so mindfulness also, I just want to name, it's not necessarily that those parts of us go away, but we can bring an awareness to the part without becoming enmeshed with it or believing that it is us or believing what it tells us, you know? Mm-hmm. And that might, so I just want to say, if the inner critic is unrelenting, that's an invitation to do some snack, to explore what the underlying vulnerability or shame shadow is there.
Mm-hmm. It can be used as a flag.
Exactly.
That's so great.
Yeah. And meditation, I definitely recommend. I mean, I think it's more indicated for some than others. And so I don't want to paint everybody's experience with a broad brushstroke and say that everybody should, but I do think it's an incredible practice that most would benefit from. And I strongly recommend it, especially to those who are feeling the pull to practice it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now tell us more about your actual practice and your work. You mentioned the workshop, so I'd love to know more about that. But what else do you offer people?
Yeah. So right now I have a practice. So I see people individually, and I have just a few openings left in September for that type of work. So if anybody wanted to work with me individually, they could. And then my main workshop is called Permission to be Powerful, and it's a self-guided journey that invites you to really do a lot of the work that I've referenced here today, but it gives you a lot of guidance and support, and there's meditations for deeper cognitive integration, which I do think, you know, is a part of it. Reinforcement is how we create change, along with healthy risk taking and, you know, walking the new walk. But going within in that way and really reprogramming the neural networks of the brain through some of the meditative work, I think it's a crucial component. And so the workshop gives you that. And yeah, it's a really beautiful journey. It's a really beautiful journey that people can access and do as they're ready to. And then I have a free workshop if anybody's interested in just, you know, getting a feel for what it's like to be in the workshop space with me. I have a Transform Limiting Beliefs workshop that's just like a condensed version and offer some more great tools and meditation and things like that for people to access.
Ooh, that sounds amazing. I think all the listeners will definitely take you up on that offer, because
I hope so.
We talk about limiting beliefs so much here on Unstuck. It's kind of one of the key points, and it is always a process of uncovering. So anything we can do to learn more about that transformation process of our beliefs would be right up the alley that we're on. So I think you'll get a lot of people taking you up on that. And then is this kind of your practice, or your business is called the Numinous Path? Is that true?
Yeah. The Numinous Path is, you know, it's interesting. Some of this is determined by the legalities around being in practice as a psychologist. Mm-hmm. So I'm licensed in California. So I have a private practice where I do therapeutic work. And then I have a coaching practice and I have my workshops. And that sort of falls under the Numinous Path category. It's an exciting way that I get to express myself and reach more people. So yeah, the Numinous Path is my online experience, really. It's part of my Instagram. People can find me on Instagram at Hey Dr. Rachel. And like the vibe of Hey Dr. Rachel on Instagram is really coming from the learnings and teachings of the Numinous Path. And it's my online educational hub. So for this wellness work.
Gotcha. So can you tell us what Numinous means for those of us that don't know?
Sure. Yeah. Numinous it's just a way to describe the awe-inspiring truth and grand mystery of being incarnate. So for me, it really defines the divinity that we all sort of have access to, and that I have felt so graced by through my healing path. And so it just feels like the light of what it means to be alive, and true, and to that, you know, we all have it. And I think that's the most beautiful truth I've ever come to know, that despite all of the distortions and sort of wicked energies that we encounter, and those are real, we all within us have a core beautiful essence that is whole and unbroken and made of love. And so Numinous sort of embodies all of that for me.
Ooh, I love that so much. What a great word. So much wrapped up into one word.
Yeah.
I love it.
Packs a punch. Yeah. It
does. And we'll make sure to link everything you just said. We'll link all of that in the show notes, so all the listeners will have easy access to it. And I'm sure they will definitely go follow you and take you up on your courses and that kind of thing, your workshops. I have a kind of more of a maybe personal, perhaps, question that I like to ask my guests, because I truly believe that the process of getting unstuck is never ending. And that's kind of something we're always doing as we are humans on this life experience that we're on. So I'm curious to know, what are you doing right now to get unstuck?
What am I not doing ever?
Yeah. Exactly. That's probably the better question.
No, I appreciate it. I think you're right. We're always evolving and always needing support. You know, one thing that I do in an ongoing way is I connect to a local sister circle. And we initially, we met through a retreat a couple years ago, and it was like an instantaneous soul bonding, and they've become really cherished, beloved friends. But one of the things we do sort of consciously is create space each month to come together around places that were stuck and really unpack it and process it and share vulnerably around like what it is for us. And then we see each other there and we offer advice if that's what we need and solutions. And so it's just one way that I'm honest with myself about my ongoing need for good, solid support, and also really give myself the chance to practice being vulnerable about that.
There's nothing better than friends you can be truly vulnerable around and really express what you need and know they'll be there for your support no matter what it is. It's the best.
Yeah, it's so precious.
Oh, I love it. Well, Dr. Rachel, thank you so, so much for being here. That was really an amazing, eye-opening, I think, for a lot of people chat. And It means so much to me to have you here. So thank you.
I'm grateful to you, Sean. Thank you for being such a gracious host. It was really sweet to be here and dialogue with you. Thank you.
All right. Take care.